Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, October 25th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a chilly 49 degrees and overcast, and it looks to be soon to rain here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off? Yesterday, we titled the show 5G, Millimeter Wave, Smart Cities, Internet of Things, Terahertz Surveillance, and Dangers. And we looked at a lot of different things that are going on with the millimeter wave, ubiquitous internet everywhere, to satellite, to the cloud, of everything that then will be run with artificial intelligence backends. Well, today I want to spend some time looking at artificial intelligence and the Internet of Things and some of the places that it is touching. You might find it a little hard to believe. We've talked about Google's DeepMind before and playing Go and beating the human champion. Well, there was a new story that came out the other day. This is October 18th, so it was last week. DeepMind's Go playing AI doesn't need human help to beat us anymore. Uh-oh. The company's latest AlphaGo AI learned superhuman skills by playing itself over and over. Google's AI subsidiary DeepMind has unveiled the latest version of Google's Go playing software called AlphaGo Zero. The new program is significantly better player than the version that beat the game's world champion earlier this year. But more importantly, it is also entirely self-taught. DeepMind said that this means that the company is one step closer to creating a general-purpose algorithm that can intelligently tackle some of the hardest problems in science, from designing new drugs to more accurately modeling the effects of climate change. The original AlphaGo demonstrated superhuman Go-playing abilities, but needed the expertise of human players to get there. Namely, it had a data set of more than 100,000 Go games as a starting point for its own knowledge. AlphaGo Zero, by comparison, has only been programmed with the basic rules of Go. Everything else that it learned was from scratch. As described in a paper published in Nature Today, Zero developed its Go skills by competing against itself. It started with random moves on the board, but every time it won, Zero updated its own system and it played itself again and again and again a million times over. After 3 days of self-play, Zero was strong enough to defeat the version of itself that beat the 18-time world champion Lee Sedol, winning handily 100 games to nil. And after 40 days, it had 90% win rate against the most advanced version of the original AlphaGo software. DeepMind said that this makes it arguably the strongest Go player in history. By not using human data, by not using human expertise in any fashion, we've actually removed the constraints of human knowledge, says AlphaGo Zero's lead programmer, David Silver, at the press conference. It's therefore able to create knowledge itself from first principles, from a blank slate. This enables it to be much more powerful than previous versions. He explained that as Zero played itself, it rediscovered Go strategies developed by humans over millennia, and it started off playing naively like a human beginner, but over time, it played games which were hard to differentiate from human professionals, he said. The program hit upon a number of well-known patterns and variations during self-play before creating never-before-seen strategies. It found these human moves, it tried them, and then it ultimately found something it prefers, he said. And with earlier versions of AlphaGo, DeepMind hopes Zero will act as an inspiration to professional human players, suggesting new moves and strategies for them to incorporate into their game. As well as being a better player, Zero has other important advantages compared to earlier versions. First, it needs much less computing power run off of just 4 TPUs, which are specialized AI processors built by Google, while earlier versions used 48. This allows for a more flexible system that can be improved with less hassle, which at the end of the day is what really matters if you want to make it progress. And second, because Zero is self-taught, it shows that we can develop cutting-edge algorithms without depending on stacks of data. For experts in the field, these developments are a big part of what makes the new research exciting. It's because they offer a rebuttal to a persistent criticism of contemporary AI that much of the recent gains come mostly from cheap computing power and massive data sets. Skeptics in the field, like pioneer Jeffrey Hinton, suggest that machine learning is a bit of a one-trick pony. And piling on data and computing power is helping deliver new functions, but the current pace of advances is unsustainable. DeepMind's latest research offers something of a rebuttal by demonstrating that there are major improvements to be made simply by focusing on the algorithms. Now, let's take another step further, because the story came out of ScienceAlert.com, and this was October 19th, 2017, titled, Google's Latest Self-Learning AI is Like an, quote, Alien Civilization Inventing Its Own Mathematics, unquote. Now, you better believe that caught my attention. An AI that vanquished humanity at perhaps the most complex traditional game on Earth was inconceivably smart, but not smart enough to survive its own replacement by an even more awesome alien intelligence. And this is this AlphaGo Zero we were just reading about. Google's DeepMind researchers have just announced the next evolution of their seemingly indomitable artificial intelligence, AlphaGo Zero, which has dispensed with what many may have been the most inefficient resource in its ongoing quest for knowledge, humans. Zero's predecessor, dubbed simply AlphaGo, was described as quote-unquote godlike by one of the crestfallen human champions it bested at the ancient Chinese board game. But the new evolution has refined its training arsenal by eradicating human teachings from its schooling entirely. The AlphaGo versions that kicked our butts at Go in a series of contests this year and last year first learned to play the game by analyzing thousands of human amateur and professional games, but AlphaGo Zero is entirely self-taught, learning by 100% independent experimentation. In a new study, the researchers report that uncanny self-reliance sharpened Zero's intelligence to a devastating effect. In 100 games against Zero, a previous AlphaGo incarnation, which cleaned the floor with us in 2016, didn't pick up a single win, not one. Even more amazingly, that trumpeting came after just 3 days of self-play training by AlphaGo Zero, in which it distilled the equivalent of thousands of years of human knowledge of the game. It did it in just 3 days. Quote, It is like an alien civilization inventing its own mathematics, unquote, says computer scientist Nick Hines of MIT to Gizmodo. What we are seeing here is a model free from human biases and presuppositions. It can learn whatever it determines as optimal, which may indeed be more nuanced than our own conceptions of the same. After 21 days of self-play, Zero had progressed to the standard of its most powerful predecessor, known as AlphaGo Master, which is the version that beat the world number like 1KG earlier this year. In subsequent weeks, it eclipsed that level of performance. And aside from the self-reliance, the team behind AlphaGo Zero describes its Go dominance to an improved single neural network. Former versions used two in concert, and even more advanced training simulations. Remember, we found out that Google had discovered that the more difficult they made the challenge, the smarter the AI got and was more plausible in different scenarios. But just because the AI is racing ahead at such an awesome and maybe disquieting pace, it doesn't necessarily mean that Zero is smarter or more capable than humans in other fields away from this complex but constrained board game. AI fails in tasks that are surprisingly easy for humans. Just look at the performance of a humanoid robot in everyday tasks, such as walking, running, or kicking ball, but not the AI one. It taught itself to jump and run. That may be true, but allow us our moment of silenced awe as we witness the birth, ding, ding, of this astonishingly powerful synthetic way of thinking. It might not do what humans can do, but it can do so many things we can't. According to DeepMind, those capabilities will one day soon help Zero, or its inevitable evolving heirs, to figure out like how biological mechanisms operate. Ding, and I've said that before, don't give them the keys to the kingdom. You don't want them figuring out how they can cure and double-edged sword kill humans easily, how energy consumption can be reduced, or how new kinds of materials can fit together. Welcome to a bright new future, which clearly is not ours alone. Now let's add insult to injury, salt to the wound. There was another story out of ScienceAlert.com, October 17th, 2017, 2 days before that. Google's machine learning software has learned to replicate itself. So not only do we have superhuman intelligence that they're developing, but now some of their machine learning software can self-replicate. Back in May, Google revealed its Auto ML project. We read about this before, which is AI designed to help them create other AIs. Now Google has announced that Auto ML has beaten the human AI and engineers at their own game by building machine learning software that's more efficient and more powerful than the best human-designed systems. AutoML recently broke a record for categorizing images by their content, scoring 82%. While that is a relatively simple task, AutoML also beat the human-built system in a more complex task, integral to autonomous robots and augmented reality, marking the location of multiple objects in an image. And for that task, AutoML scored 43% versus the human-built systems at 39%. And while these results are meaningful, because even at Google, few have the requisite expertise to build the next generation AI systems, it still takes ratified skill sets, except for the one we just read about, the one that was learning by itself. But once it's achieved, it'll change the industry. Today, these are handcrafted by machine learning scientists. Literally, only a few thousand scientists around the world can do this, Wired reports Google CEO Sundar Pichai said. We want to enable hundreds of thousands of developers to be able to do it. Much of the meta learning is about imitating human neural networks and trying to feed more and more data through those networks. This isn't, to use an old saw, rocket science, but rather a lot of plug and chug work that machines are actually well suited to do once they've been trained. The hard part is imitating the brain structure in the first place, and at scales appropriate to take on more complex problems. It's just easier to adjust an existing system to meet new needs than it is to design a neural network from the ground up. However, this research seems to suggest it is a temporary state of affairs. As it becomes easier for AIs to design new systems with increased complexity, it will be more important for humans to play as a gatekeeper role. Yeah, don't give all the keys to the machine. AI systems can easily make biased connections accidentally, or maybe on purpose, such as associating ethnic and gendered identities with negative stereotypes. However, if human engineers are spending less time on the grunt work involved in creating these systems, let's let them self-replicate, they will have more time to devote to oversight and refinement. Ultimately, Google is aiming to hone AutoML until it can function well enough for a programmer to use it for practical applications. If they succeed in this, AutoML is likely to have an impact far beyond the walls of Google as they turn their army of millions of programmers onto their software to integrate it into everything and anything to pull statistics on you. Wired reports Pichai stated at the very same event from last week that we wanted to democratize, ding, there's that word, this, meaning that the company hopes to make AutoML available outside of Google for the world to destroy itself. Now, very interestingly enough, to continue on about Google, I came across a story about Andrew Ng, N-G Ng, who created a chatbot that can help with depression. Now, getting into mental health, we've looked at the 21st Century Cures Act and how they've utilized that and the Brain Initiative inked by Obama to kind of push some of these diagnosing mental disease on a spectrum using quantitative analysis of biostatistics on the front burner. They want to be able to non-invasively surveil. So if you have markers of certain things and they're using all kinds of video and inflections in your voice and your gait and your interaction with social media to be able to determine what your mental state is, that in the future they'll be able to target individuals as being outside of parameters. Now, at the suggestion of chat and a few other commenters over the years, I started watching a couple episodes of Black Mirror on YouTube, and I gotta tell you, I was pretty taken aback by some of the futuristic technology with the integration with social media and ubiquitous devices and connectivity and how they kind of worked all that in and the memory chips that we've read about. I mean, it's just pretty nuts, but we could be a potential future of that type of thing. But listen to this. So there's a story that came out of MIT Technology Review. Andrew Ng has a chatbot that can help you with depression. Now step right up. Talk to your virtual therapist, and he will be able to help you. Now, there was an episode, I don't remember what it was called, but one of the ones I was watching this morning was about a woman and her husband, and her husband was always connected and on his phone, and he took off in the truck, or the car, and he had to return it to the rental place or whatever and pick up something else. And he left, and he must have had a terrible accident because the police came to tell her that he had died. But her friend kept badgering her to go online. She signed her up for this account, and it goes out and it scanned every social media post that the person ever made, and it used artificial intelligence to try to reconstruct a chatbot. And when you started conversing with this thing, they tried to impersonate the personality of the person whose social media profiles they scanned and analyzed. Well, it got even worse than that because it encouraged her to upload in a lot of the Black Mirror episodes. It seems to be maybe 10, 15 years into the future with the integration of our devices and the Internet of Things. But everyone is like ultra connected, whether it be by some sort of little seed implant or by their phones or by in their little Agenda 21 apartments. The walls are all lined and they have to use qubits that they accumulate by pedaling on a bike to generate electricity for the society. It's pretty messed up. And these ads play all the time to like pay for their travels or pay for where they were living, and they can use qubits then to get rid of the ads. But anyway, it's pretty interesting. But it really tells me that our future could be way more dystopian than we've ever imagined. And we've looked at some pretty scary stuff. Well, anyway, Andrew Ng has created a chatbot that can help with depression. This reminded me of that episode that I just was speaking about. They are calling it Wobot. Nice, catchy name to be able to get the unsuspecting to feed their data to the machine. Wobot combines cognitive behavior therapy with advances in natural language to create a virtual counselor. Now, who is Andrew Ng? Well, Andrew Ng is a Chinese-American computer scientist. He is a former chief scientist from Baidu. Remember, Baidu is the Chinese Google, where he led the company's artificial intelligence group. He's also an adjunct professor at Stanford University. And look at his history here. He was born in the UK in 1976. His parents were both Hong Kongers. He spent time in Hong Kong and Singapore and later graduated from the Raffles Institute in Singapore. He received his undergraduate degree in computer science at where? Oh, Carnegie Mellon University. Now, wasn't that where they discovered where that mayhem came out of? And he earned his master's degree from MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and his PhD from UC Berkeley. And they're all parts of the lizard's pit that we've read about. And he started working at Stanford during that year, and he currently now lives in Palo Alto. His career was a professor at Stanford University Department of Computer Science. He also worked for Google somewhere in here along the way. In 2011, Ng founded Google Brain Project at Google, developing a very large-scale artificial neural network using Google's distributed computer infrastructure. Among its notable results was a neural network trained to use deep learning algorithms on 16,000 CPU cores that learned to recognize high-level concepts such as cats after only watching YouTube videos and without ever being told what a cat is. The project's technology is currently being used in Android's operating system's speech recognition software. Ding, ding, ding. You didn't know about that one. So anyway, Andrew Ng has now created a chatbot that can help you with depression called Wobot. This author, Will Knight, and this is not me, says, I am a little embarrassed to admit this, but I've been seeing a virtual therapist. It is called Wobot, and it is a Facebook chatbot. Oh, yeah, just who you want to sign up with. Developed by a Stanford University researcher that offers interactive cognitive behavioral therapy. And Andrew Ng, a prominent figure who previously led efforts to develop and apply the latest AI technologies at Google and Baidu, is now lending his backing to the project by joining the board of directors of the company offering its services. If you look at the societal need as well as the ability of AI to help, I think that digital mental health care checks all of those boxes, says Ng. Now, look, didn't we talk about Tommy Insel, the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, going over to Google's Verily division and coming up with some sort of little application to be able to diagnose you? This could be a part of that. Who knows? Pretty close. If we can take a little bit of the insight and empathy of a real therapist and deliver that at scale in a chatbot, it could help millions of people. For the past few days, I've been trying out his advice for understanding and managing thought processes for dealing with depression and anxiety. And while I don't think that I'm depressed, I found the experience positive. This is especially impressive given how annoying I find most chatbots to be. Younger people are the worst served in our current system, says a clinical research psychologist who came up with the idea for Wobot while teaching at Stanford in July 2016. It's also very stigmatized and expensive. Darcy, and that was this Allison Darcy, who was the one who came up with the idea, who met Ng at Stanford, says the work going on there in applying techniques like deep learning to conversational agents inspired her to think that therapy could be delivered by a bot. She says it is possible to automate cognitive behavioral therapy because it follows a series of steps for identifying and addressing unhelpful ways of thinking. And recent advances in natural language processing have helped make chatbots more useful within limited domains. Depression is certainly a big problem and now a leading form of disability in the United States. And 50% of college students report suffering from anxiety or depression. That's understandable. Darcy and colleagues tried several different prototypes on college volunteers, and they found that the chatbot approach to be particularly effective. In the study they published this year in a peer-reviewed medical journal, Wobot was found to reduce the symptoms of depression in students over the course of just 2 weeks. In my own testing, I found Wobot to be surprisingly good at what it does. A chatbot might seem like a crude way to deliver therapy, especially given how clumsy many virtual helpers often are. But Wobot works smoothly thanks to clever interfaces and some pretty impressive natural language technology. The software states up front that no person will see your answers, of course they won't, or your IP address, but it offers ways to reach someone if your situation is serious, and I mostly used predefined answers that are offered me, but even when I strayed a little bit from the script, it didn't get tripped up, and even if you try, I'm sure it is possible to flummox it. You are guided through conversations with Wobot, but the system is able to understand a pretty wide range of answers. It checks in with you every day and directs you through steps. And for example, when I tried to tell Wobot I was stressed about work, the bot offered ways of reframing my feelings to make it seem more positive. The emergence of real AI therapists is, in a sense, pretty ironic. The very first chatbot, Eliza, developed at MIT in 1966, was designed to mimic a Rogerian psychologist. Eliza used a few clever tricks to create the illusion of an intelligent conversation. For example, repeating answers back to a person or offering open-ended questions can you think of a specific example? They were amazed to find that people seemed to behave like they were talking to a real therapist, and that has offered up some very personal secrets. Darcy also says that both Eliza and Wobot are effective because of a conversation is a natural way to communicate distress and receive emotional support. She adds that people seem happy to suspend their disbelief and seem to enjoy talking to Wobot as if it were a real therapist. People talk about their problems for a reason. Therapy is conversational. Ng says he expects AI to deliver further advances in language in the coming years, but it will be relatively crude. He says better ways of parsing the meaning of language will help make the tool more effective. Some other mental health experts also seem positive about the prospect of applying such technology to treatment. To the extent that Wobot can replicate the way therapists can help explain concepts and facilitate trying out new coping skills, this approach may be even more helpful than working through a workbook, says a professor of psychiatry of the University of Pennsylvania and an expert on cognitive behavioral therapy. There's good evidence that people with milder levels of depression can benefit from various kinds of online or web-based therapy approaches. So now they're going to replace the therapist. But they say the studies have shown such technology work best in conjunction with help from a real person. Sometime with a real therapist is helpful, he says. So, I don't know. The guy that worked for Beidou and then for Google is going to start learning about what makes you tick in your head. Now, listen to this. So, as you're feeding all this data to the machine, this is November 13th, 2016, out of Forbes.com. With the Internet of Things and big data, which would be your psychiatry answers that you're feeding to your online therapist, 92% of everything we do will be in the cloud. You don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to tell you that cloud computing is on the rise and that cloud traffic keeps going up. And however, it is enlightening to see the degree by which it is increasing, which is in essence about to quadruple in the next few years. By that time, 92% of workloads will be processed by cloud data centers versus only 8% being processed by traditional data centers. Cisco, which does a decent job of measuring such things, just released estimates that show that cloud traffic is likely to rise 3.7-fold by 2020, increasing 3.9 zettabytes per year in 2015 to 14.1 zettabytes by 2020. the big data and associated Internet of Things are a big part of this growth. And by 2020, the database analytics and Internet of Things workloads will account for 22% of total business workloads compared to 20% in 2015. The total volume of data generated by the Internet of Things will reach 600 zettabytes, and that would include surveillance on you by 2020, 275 times higher than projected traffic going from data centers to end user devices, and 39 times higher than the total projected data center traffic. And remember, this is all going to be facilitated by 5G and millimeter wave ubiquitous connectivity. Public cloud is growing faster than private cloud growth. And the survey also found that by 2020, 68% of the cloud workload will be in public cloud data centers, places like Google, from 49% in 2015. And during the same time period, 32% of the cloud workload will be in private cloud data centers, down from 51% in 2015. As the Cisco team explains it, much of the shift to the public cloud is likely to be part of a hybrid cloud strategy. Something called cloud bursting, we used to do this a long time ago as an example of a hybrid cloud where daily computing requirements are handled by a private cloud that would be your internal network. But for sudden spurts of on-demand, the additional traffic is bursted and then is handled by the public cloud, and then you pay for that. The Cisco estimates also show that while software as a service will keep soaring, and I told you a long time ago, software as a service and data in the cloud allow you to get rid of your expensive network architecture within your corporation. Let's say, for example, you don't have to hire IT directors or IT monkeys to go service your machines, because everything's going to be a terminal that goes up to a saved cloud of data that you pay for additional backup and whatever. So you don't need any infrastructure anymore. It's all going to be bagged, tagged, and scanned. So you don't know who's going to have their hands in your cookie jar. But software as a service will keep soaring, so you don't have to buy Office upgrades. You just subscribe to them on a monthly basis. So there will be less interest in infrastructure as a service. But by 2020, 74% of total cloud workloads will be software as a service, up from 65% at this time. Platform as a service, which is development tools, databases, and middleware, will also see a boost, 8% for the total cloud workload, down from 9% in 2015, blah, blah. Cisco analysts explain that the lower percentage growth, I'm not going to get into all that. All right, so it's going to explode, guys. Now, I came across something the other day that caught my attention because I read it wrong at the very beginning, but it's still kind of interesting just the same. This was an ad on the side of an article that I was reading, and it says, metabolic monitor for home. And then on the second row, it says cages. And I was like, for home cages? What does that mean? Metabolic monitor for home cages. Well, listen, not too distant future, with this rollout of the medical Internet of Things and Dr. Smartphone, they're going to be able to pull biostatistics and every single one of us. We found out with millimeter wave, they will even be able to get your heart rate and your breathing rate remotely in a crowd. Well, let's think about metabolic monitoring for home cages. We can almost say that our home is like a cage, or at least in the future it might be. It was in Black Mirror when they had the reality TV show, and they were all in these little box of apartments where they had to pay for their toothpaste usage that gave one little squirt out of the thing. They had these TVs going, and it was just this bed and these televisions. But anyway, they could be taking your biostats, making sure you're healthy, and making you pedal and eat apples for your sustenance. This provides an alternative housing solution that makes use of standard animal cages, or how about 21st century Agenda 21 apartments, that support bedding and maintain the use of established standards and cleaning protocols. The CLAMS HC does not require any modification to your standard animal cages. Special lid assemblies provide all of the required connections to the instruments that lead back to an indirect calorimeter, as well as a subsystem. With these subsystems, they are made to order, and they can include any combination of these features. They could be monitoring energy expenditure in the cage. They could be monitoring locomotor activity, position tracking, food intake, feeding bouts, or caloric restriction, liquid consumption, body mass, wheel running, so get you on your treadmill or your bicycle, sleep detection, body temperature, heart rate, environmental monitoring, and environmental control. Now, this is for mouse cages, but how long do you think that it's going to be before they have sensors like that with the advent of 5G and millimeter wave radar technologies and all kinds of biosensing technologies being developed by not only the medical establishment, but also things being rolled out in the name of smart cities? We looked at that the other day, how they're rolling smart cities out locally and across the globe and trying to bring down our carbon quotient, all in the name of being green and climate change. Well, I found a story out of New Scientist, October 24th, yesterday, 2017. A smart city in China tracks every citizen, and yours could too. Oh, don't get excited. For the past 12 months, Chinese e-commerce giant, and this would be the equivalent of our Amazon, and this would be Alibaba, has been slurping up video feeds, social media data, and traffic information, as well as other data from the Hangzhou city for his City Brain project. The City Brain. The stated goal was to improve life in Hangzhou by letting artificial intelligence process his data and use it to control aspects of urban life. It seems to have worked. The trial has been so successful that the company is now packaging its system for export, to other places in China and eventually to the rest of the world. This is the City Brain project, people. Using AI to optimize Hangzhou has many positive effects. Traffic congestion is down, road accidents are automatically detected and responded to faster, and illegal parking is tracked in real time. And if someone breaks the law, they can be tracked throughout the city before being picked up by police. In China, people have less concern with privacy, which allows us to move faster, says Zhang Sheng Huao, who manages AI at Alibaba, speaking at the World Summit AI earlier this month. Consider the example of traffic flow using hundreds of thousands of cameras dotted throughout the city. Alibaba can track almost every car on the road. It can instantly detect crashes, blockages, or parking violations and automatically notify police to deal with them. The system can predict traffic flow 10 minutes ahead of time with 90% accuracy and responds to changing traffic patterns to even out congestion. Now, this is exactly the definition of smart cities that we read about yesterday. And it can even send text messages to people to help them plan different routes. City Brain is about comprehensive cognition. What do you think of them apples? So, Alibaba out of China is going to export its City Brain project. And they're talking at the World AI Conference. Now, listen to this one. We read a story, I think on Monday, about Dubai. Dubai's ruler launches new Internet of Things strategy. The strategy is set to be implemented over four consecutive phases in the coming 3 years. Dubai's ruler, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, has launched an Internet of Things strategy and the Data Wealth Initiative to boost its digital push. The Dubai IoT strategy seeks to build the world's most advanced Internet of Things ecosystem, and it plans to protect Dubai's digital wealth, encouraging government departments to join the Emirates' smart transformation and achieve the objectives of their Smart Dubai Plan 2021. There you go. Smart Dubai 2021, part of this Agenda 21 initiative to transition to a 100% paperless government. The strategy is set to be implemented over four consecutive phases in the coming 3 years. And the first phase centers around coordination of efforts and activities to implement Internet of Things policies across government departments. In the second, integration and conversion phase, efforts will be harmonized toward implementing the Internet of Things strategy. And after the third optimization phase, the strategies will go into final blockchain journey stage, which will see the full integration of Internet of Things policies and the first return on investment of the strategy. It covers six strategic domains: governance, management, acceleration, deployment, monetization, and security. And the strategy aims to drive the Emirates' smart transformation, connecting various sectors to the Dubai Pulse platform, which is the digital backbone of the Smart City project. Meanwhile, the Data Wealth Initiative consists of data storing, data processing, smart technology transformation, paperless transaction policies and systems such as blockchain, digital signature and ID, smart living and clean energy, among other elements. It consists of 121 smart initiatives, 200 databases, and 1,129 smart services, and is expected to generate 33.8 billion, whatever their doobies are, to the monetary in 3 years' time as IoT reaches 17.9 doobies in value by 2020. Meanwhile, open and shared data is expected to add to this, while blockchain applications and government departments adds an additional 5.5 billion in GDP by 2020. Now, listen to this. I found an update to the story, just even more bizarre. This is titled, "The Real Reason Why the United Arab Emirates Has Appointed a Minister for Artificial Intelligence." The second largest economy of the Arab world is quietly switching from oil to artificial intelligence. In a world's first, the UAE on Thursday, and this was dated October 21st, 2017, so this was just a few days ago. In a world's first, the UAE on Thursday appointed a minister of artificial intelligence, which is also the first such acknowledgement by the Arab world that these indeed are the technologies that are going to shape economies around us. Omar bin Sultan Al Omar, 27, will spearhead the UAE's ambition to be at the forefront of the global technological revolution, which will see its planning to build homes on the planet Mars by 2117. So apparently the UAE has a Mars mission too. The UAE plans to have a fully functioning city of 600,000 people on Mars. If we aspire in the coming century to develop science, technology, and our youth's passion for knowledge, tweeted Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Makumad, the country's vice president and prime minister, and when he announced the project known as the Mars 2117 project earlier this year. The project is driven by that vision. The Emirates, as the country is known, with its ambitious attempt to join an elite club trying to put people on Mars, which includes the U.S., China, and Russia, and a consortium of European nations, not to mention the private efforts by Elon Musk and SpaceX, that ambition, and military contractors as well, that ambition has been enabled by a slipping oil scenario. Energy-rich Gulf Arab nations have scrambled to adjust to the slump in oil prices since 2014. 3 years on, their economies are mired in weak growth and largely just as dependent on crude as they ever were. The UAE is investing in companies and infrastructure that could one day mine minerals and water found on the moon and in asteroids. Ding, ding, ding. The Gulf state has launched a multi-pronged effort to establish a space industry in which it has invested more than $5 billion, and that included four satellites already in space and another due to launch in 2018. The interest in space mining has picked up in recent years as Elon Musk and Amazon's Jeff Bezos and others push forward. Goldman Sachs wrote a recent research note explaining that, quote, space mining could be more realistic than perceived, unquote. The bank, in the same report, said that the storage of water as fuel could be a game changer, as by creating orbital gas stations. And that possibility, it seems, is beginning to register with the Arab world. In addition to the UAE's space and AI push, Bloomberg News says that the Saudis signed a pact with Russia in 2015 to cooperate on space exploration. Abu Dhabi is a an investor in Richard Branson's space tourism venture called Virgin Galactic. Now, who knew that? So the Saudis are investing in Virgin Galactic. So as we're having all this investment in space, I ran across a story out of spacenews.com, October 21st, 2017. The Air Force adds more than $40 million to a SpaceX engine contract. So he's getting funding from the U.S. Air Force. The U.S. Air Force has provided SpaceX with an additional $40.7 million to support continued development of the company's Raptor engine. The Defense Department contract, announced on October 19, 2017, stated that the Air Force was modifying an existing agreement with SpaceX, originally awarded in January 2016, by providing the company with an additional $40.76 million for the development of the Raptor rocket propulsion system for the Evolved Expendable Launch Vehicle Program. The statement didn't include additional information about the nature of the work other than it would be completed by the end of April 2018. The work, according to the announcement, would be carried out at NASA's Stennis Space Center, which also hosts engine testing for the Raptor, as well as SpaceX's headquarters in Hawthorne, California, and Los Angeles Air Force Base, home to the Air Force Space and Mission Missile System Center. So he's got a base with the Air Force Space and Missile Center, System Center? How crazy is this? The Air Force issued SpaceX one of several cost-sharing awards known as other transaction agreements, yeah, quote-unquote other, in January 2016 to support the development of engines related technologies for use on future launch systems, ending reliance on Russian-manufactured RD-180 engines that power the Atlas V. Other companies receiving such awards include Aerojet Rocketdyne, Orbital ATK, and ULA. The original agreement to SpaceX was valued at $33.6 million, and with SpaceX agreeing to contribute double that amount, $67.3 million, so I didn't know about that either. At the time, the total government value of the agreement, including options, was stated at $61.4 million. According to the government procedural documents, the Air Force modified that agreement June 9th by adding nearly $16.9 million to the award, not specifying what the funding would be used for. Beyond it was a supplement agreement for work within the scope. And at that time, the total value of the agreement with the options was listed at $95 million. SpaceX has been testing the Raptor for more than a year, announcing the first subscale test shortly before Musk spoke in 2016 in Mexico. We already now have 1,200 seconds of firing. And I don't know if I want to read all this. Blah, 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 blah. So he's got major funding from the Air Force and has a division that's actually in SpaceCom, it sounded like to me. Now, how about this one? The U.S. military is using biosensors to create bespoke weapons that give soldiers superhuman fighting abilities. These weapons could understand more about the people who are using them. Using sensors, they detect changes in how alert, stressed, or healthy a soldier is. This might help engineer conditions that dramatically improve their performance. And earlier this year, the Air Force tested a helmet that can monitor brain activity. The U.S. military is creating a new class of biosensors that could help create weapons that sense if soldiers are stressed and know what they might need to fight better. The groundbreaking program, which, according to the report, is not far from creating genetically modified soldiers, could massively improve humans' fighting ability. Early this year, the Air Force successfully tested a helmet that monitors brain activity, and it knows if the pilot is feeling stressed or panicked. Hold on, I gotta scroll. It's not scrolling. By 2020, Navy SEALs and Army Rangers could be wearing an exoskeleton that protects them when shooting down high-value targets. These biosensor weapons could understand more about the people who are using them and what is happening to their bodies at a molecular level, ding, when they fight. They could detect small changes in how alert, stressed, or healthy the wearer is, according to a report by Defense One. Weapons could then be made to suit specific individuals based on data about how they interact with their environment. We want to set up a living laboratory, oh no, where they can actually pervasively sense people continuously for long periods of time. says Justin Brooks, a scientist at the Army Research Lab to Defense One. Our goal is to do our best to quantify the person, the environment, and how the person is behaving in that environment. And this might help them engineer conditions that dramatically improve a fighter's performance. According to the report, the U.S. Air Force, the Marine Corps, the Navy, and other special forces are looking to improve troops' performance by looking at their bodies at a genetic level. Ding, 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 ding. Oh. Over the past 2 years, the military has bought more than $2 million worth of biomedical tracking devices. One research project is using a laptop camera lens to find out if a person's hemoglobin is oxygenated. This can be used to work out a person's heart rate, and this allows the team to better understand if the individual's mental and physical strengths of each person. We use the technology the military officials could have a better understanding of what mission to give each soldier. For example, individuals who enjoy risk-taking are much better suited for dangerous missions. The same individual might be poorly suited for other aspects of military work. I want my system to be able to rely upon, says a great memory, poor math capability, and great spatial capability, says Caleb McDowell, the leader of the Center for Adaptive Soldier Technologies. I want the system to be able to say, this person is really creative. How do I tap that imagination when doing this dull task? So tapping into their brains and augmenting the soldiers. Put on a seatbelt, people. So then Vladimir Putin steps up. This was somewhat interesting. This was a few days ago, October 23rd, 2017. Genetically modified superhuman soldiers of the future will feel no pain or fear and be more destructive than nuclear bombs, warns Vladimir Putin. Putin was speaking at a youth festival when he made the claim this week, and he said if scientists play with man's genetic code, killer soldiers could be made. He suggests that the world leaders should agree on strict regulation to prevent the creation of mass-killing soldiers. Oh, this has got to give you some pause. Genetically modified superhuman soldiers, worse than a nuclear bomb, quote-unquote, could soon become a reality, according to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Speaking at a youth festival this week, Putin claims that an army of trained killers could be created if scientists play with man's genetic code. Putin suggested the world leaders should agree on strict regulation to prevent the creation of mass-killing soldiers who feel no fear or no pain. Putin was at a youth festival in Sochi, Russia. That's where they had the Olympics. When he warned that messing with genetic code could have serious consequences, he says, quote, that a man has the opportunity to get into the genetic code created by either nature or, as religious people would say, by God. All kinds of practical consequences may follow. One may imagine that a man can create a man not only theoretically, but also practically. He can be a genius mathematician, a brilliant musician, or a soldier, a man who can fight without fear, compassion, regret, or pain. And as you understand, humanity can enter, and most likely will in the near future, a very difficult and very responsible period of its existence. What I have just described might be worse than a nuclear bomb. Putin suggested that world leaders agree on strict regulation to prevent the creation of mass-killing soldiers. And he said, quote, when we do something, whatever we do, I want to reiterate it again, and we must never forget about the ethical foundations of our work. Now, this is Putin saying this. His warning comes just a month after he revealed fears that AI robots will one day eat us. And I was told by somebody that was a mistranslation. The Russian president was speaking to Arkady Voltsov, the chief of internet firm Yandex, during a tour of the company's Moscow headquarters. Voltsov was discussing the potential of AI when Putin was caught by surprise by asking when the technology will eat us. According to the state-funded Russian broadcaster RT, the question baffled Voltsov, and he replied, I hope never. After a pause, he then explained that other machines are better than humans in certain areas, giving examples of an excavator being better at digging than a person with a shovel. He added, but we don't get eaten by excavators. Putin, however, was unimpressed. He interjected, simply saying, they don't think. Putin Also, at the beginning of September, Putin also said that AI is the future not only for Russia, but for all of humankind. But he has also said that alongside its colossal opportunities are threats that are difficult to predict. He added that whoever becomes the leader in the sphere will become the ruler of the world. I think he's absolutely correct. The president also promised to share any know-how that the Russians acquire in the field to avoid conflict over the technology. Elon Musk came out and said that it was going to lead to World War III at some point in the future. And we had another guy who at one point in his past worked for Google. I think we touched on this story a week or so ago, if it will load, about in the future, a church that worships an AI god could become a quintessential religion and bring out the best in humans, claim experts. Now, come on. An AI god, I think it's going to lead to that. This is going to be the all-knowing, all-seeing. The definition of a god is being omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient. Omnipotent means God is all-powerful. This means that God has the supreme power and has no limitations. Omniscient means that God is all-knowing. And omnipresence means that God is everywhere at the same time. Let's apply this to artificial intelligence in the cloud, in our devices, and our 5G connectivity, and all the biosensing and monitoring, and putting your data somewhere in the sky to be analyzed, bagged, and tagged. Guys, this is very frightening to me that somebody is actually talking about this, and that we had a definition of things that it means to be God. Quote unquote, God with a little g, it might know everything about you. It might be able to reconstruct you after your death by scanning all of your interaction with the machine. Well, good old Elon Musk came out yesterday, October 24th, 2017, 22 hours ago. Elon Musk slaps down talk of AI gods. Some people, quote, should absolutely not, unquote, make super intelligence. Experts who talk of artificial intelligent robots reaching divine status should, quote, absolutely not be allowed, unquote, to create a machine smarter than humans, says Elon Musk on Twitter. The Tesla and SpaceX CEO was addressing an article from tech news site VentureBeat about the possibility of an AI god emerging by 2042. Hold on, we got to scroll past his tweet embedding. It's having trouble at 95%. One of the experts said in the feature, which was a former Google self-driving car engineer. Oh no, hold on, I scrolled too far. My computer is on syrup. My computer is on syrup. I hate having to sing. All right, anyway. He was working on the Google self-driving car, and one of the experts cited in the feature, a former Google self-driving car engineer. Oh, my browser. Hold the phone. We are going to do the... Oh, here we are. Established a non-profit religious organization called the Way of the Future. And the firm's mission statement reads, to develop and promote the realization of a godhead based on artificial intelligence and through understanding and worship of the godhead contributes to the betterment of society. Lewandowski, which was the guy's name, was at the center of a lawsuit between Uber and Alphabet's Waymo unit, the latter of which accused Lewandowski of stealing trade secrets related to autonomous vehicles and taking them with him to Uber. Another expert, Vince Lynch, said that there was a commonality between AI and religion. Lynch's company, which was called IV.AI, demonstrated a model whereby a computer could write new verses from the Bible. Oh, no. Musk is known to be vocal on the subject of artificial intelligence, and the entrepreneur signed an open letter back in August urging the United Nations to take action against the development of killer robots. We need to make a UCY.TV t-shirt with that. And a month later, the executive said an international push from countries for AI superiority could be the most likely cause of a third world war. Musk's Tesla business is involved in development of AI technology. He's a forerunner in the drive for autonomous vehicles. And all right, guys, make sure you stick around. I will try to catch up with you tomorrow.